Hello and welcome. I'm Marjorie Herman, and I'm pleased to offer you another edition of Sounds Choral. This program is a special one for me, as I'll spend the hour with Dr. Anthony Maglion, Director of Choral Studies at William Jewell College in Liberty, Missouri, and a colleague of mine on the summer faculty of Westminster Choir College. The occasion is the radio premiere of Dr. Maglion's The Mystic Trumpeter on texts of Walt Whitman. A published composer with notable commissions throughout the United States, he is the director of the Schola Cantorum of the Greater Kansas City Chapter of the American Guild of Organists. I caught up with him last summer, and I asked him, being a trumpeter all his life, when the choral bug hit.
Well, the choral bug hit me in high school. Sophomore year, I had a fabulous conductor. I went to Piscataway High School in central New Jersey, and to really want to be like her is why I decided to go to school. I thought forever I'd be a high school choir conductor because I felt like that was a calling for me. And so I went to Westminster Choir College. I graduated and I got the job at Piscataway High School. And then I had that job for 4 years before I decided to go back to graduate school. And then the rest is sort of history. Now I'm in Kansas City.
Tell us how Randolph Lee, who is the trumpeter in this work, came to be such an influence on your musical life.
When I was in graduate school, I met Randy in one of our very first classes. He was studying for his master's degree, and I was doing my doctorate at UCLA. I was trying to put together a recital, and I needed several trumpet players. Also, I figured, why not pair that up with some Baroque chamber music as well? So we did the Foch Concerto I-8 with Randy as the solo trumpeter, and he just blew me away. And so after that first recital, he and I have stayed friends, and that now he's on faculty at the University of Florida. We've kept in contact, and I wanted to write a piece for him specifically, and so now I have the opportunity to do just that.
Right. It appears that there aren't many pieces that call for chorus and trumpet, and you mentioned one that you were involved with at one point.
Yeah, a couple years ago, I had the opportunity to perform Halsey Stevens' Magnificat for trumpet, string orchestra, and choir. And I was astounded by that piece for a couple reasons. I mean, it's definitely American sounding. So it sort of sounded to me as if it was Copland's Quiet City with a choir added to it, mm-hmm. which I thought was remarkable. And I started having these ideas of, wow, what could one do with a trumpet and a choir? And I know there are probably many pieces out there. I know Leo Nestor has one, but at that point, I hadn't really come across them because especially a small choir of 40 voices or 30 voices can be overbalanced by one brass instrument very easily. But I found that the writing of the Halsey Stevens didn't allow for that.
You had said that there are so many considerations that go into how one organizes a piece like this. Mm-hmm. And you were telling me that some of them are really practical reasons.
Yep, certainly. I chose to design the piece of music in 8 movements to correspond with the 8 stanzas. In addition, the soloists that I composed for were soloists that I knew I would have the opportunity to work with because they were on faculty at William Jewell, mm-hmm. the organist as well. And so I composed for the forces that we had at hand. But luckily, there were wonderful forces on hand. We have a really great little music program at William Jewell.
Let's talk about the orchestration a little bit. Of course, we have the trumpets, but there are also trombones, bass drum, a suspended cymbal, a gong, and the tubular bells. Mm. Tell us about your choice of those instruments.
The premiere of the work was going to be on a concert that also had Gabrielli's and Ecclesi's. And so I wanted a brass orchestration that would work for both pieces. That was another practical consideration, mm-hmm. of course. But the use of trombones and not tuba, especially for the lowest part, was mainly to complement the organ, knowing that I was going to get the heft of the low frequencies from the pedals, mm-hmm. and I didn't necessarily need that. And I wanted more of a point and more of a texture of brass that could be biting and edgy, mm-hmm. as much as I wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. And I find that trombone and trumpets really have those colors that I was looking for. Plus, I wanted the ability to, as you'll hear in the first movement, to have this echo effect with the soloist. And so sometimes the trumpets just sort of act as if you were putting a sustain pedal on the trumpet soloist, which was the other thing I was looking for.
We talked about the title, The Mystic Trumpeter, from mm-hmm. Whitman's point of view, mm-hmm. and you had some thoughts about that.
It all comes down to what is the definition of mystic? There's a definition: a person who seeks by contemplation and self-surrender to obtain unity with or absorption into the deity or the absolute, or who believes in the spiritual apprehension of truths that are beyond intellect. I had to look that definition up, not because I wasn't aware of what mysticism was, but because I wanted to put a definition on my concept for what Whitman was really reaching for with this poem. And I think what it comes down to is that the whole poem itself is a meditation, and the trumpeter is a guide, like a spiritual guide on the meditation. What I find most amazing about the poetry is that it is sacred without being sacred. It's a completely secular, sacred poem. You know, there's almost no direct references to Christ or to God specifically.
But you get the message really
clearly.
But
you get the message extremely clearly. Yeah. And as you'll hear later on in the piece, it's the series of vignettes that take the narrator of the poem and then through the narrator, the listener, on a journey that leads to a greater self-awareness of human nature and then the understanding that there is still hope for humankind.
Because the trumpet has that role, I have asked you, and you have agreed most kindly, to sing for us the four-note theme.
Da-da-dum, pa-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da. And that's the four-note theme.
And immediately, I have no sense of key. You can't know where the trumpeter is taking us.
Right.
At the beginning.
Actually, that was the idea behind the design. It was one of these that I could put those four notes over top of several harmonic ideas, and it could be G major. It could be Phrygian. You go between all of these different permutations of using those four notes, and I found myself with a whole wealth of harmonic options and melodic options and things of that sort.
So why don't you describe the first movement a bit, and then we'll listen to the opening bars.
I chose to introduce this idea of this trumpeter calling the narrator by setting the trumpet player over a pedal, but then the trumpeter is at a distance. And in fact, in the recording, we recorded him outside of the sanctuary behind closed doors. And the baritone who is working as the narrator is talking about, I hear this trumpeter. What is this trumpeter trying to tell me? Why is this trumpeter bidding for me to come this direction? And so that's the interplay between the two. And there's even this moment where you can hear that use of echo we were talking about earlier, where the trumpet soloist plays the theme, and then you hear it sort of swirl around the narrator. And he even makes mention of that in that first bit of text where it says, I hear thee, trumpeter, listening alert, I catch thy notes, now pouring, whirling like a tempest round me. And you can hear the trumpet sort of surround the listener using that echo effect.
We heard the opening of Movement 1 of The Mystic Trumpeter by Anthony Maglione. And so, Tony, explain the process for Movement 2.
So I really conceived of all three of the first movements as one large movement. Movement 2 is, if you were to think of Movement 1 as a recitative and Movement 3, as you'll hear part of later, as an aria, Movement 2 is this chorus that I just sort of inserted in between to break up the recit and aria. Plus, there was this magnificent imagery that Whitman uses of waves, oceans musical, chaotically surging, that now ecstatic ghost close to me bending, thy cornet echoing, pealing. I mean, there's just all this great imagery that I decided to use. And you can hear, again, you can hear if you listen closely, both in the pitch content of the organist and the brass as they come in and the choir, you can even hear like, ya-da-dee-dee-dum, echoing, pealing. And there's the trumpeter theme again, which I've sort of woven into melodic content as well as in harmonic content and in clusters and things of that sort. But it gave me this wonderful opportunity to use suspended cymbal percussion to give that idea of the waves crashing. And then thy cornet echoing, pealing. At that point, the sopranos and altos split into three choirs. So you have this echoing, 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 pealing, pealing, pealing from three different ensembles. And when those ensembles are singing at the same time, you're also getting portions of the pitch content from the theme happening simultaneously, but from different voices.
And so here is the opening of movement two.
So movement three is where the narrator finally agrees to follow the trumpet player on this mystical journey. And so even in the text, it says, "Blow, trumpeter, free and clear, I follow thee, while at thy liquid prelude, glad, serene, the fretting world, the streets, the noisy hours of day, withdraw." And that actually gave me a wonderful moment to be able to paint the crowded streets and everything withdraw. And I use that by just sort of letting everything in the music evaporate except for this chord in choir one, and then another chord in choir two that comes in while the baritone finishes sort of painting the rest of the text over top of it. It's a very calm, introspective assurance, and the narrator is now ready to commit to the journey. And so it moves on from there into these vignettes that are a little bit more specific.
I just wanted to point out that the chorus in this movement is on ooh or ah.
That's correct.
And the text that the baritone is singing is a holy calm descends like dew upon me.
Right.
And then there's the chorus and trumpeter and organ interlude that you mentioned.
Yes.
Which is really, really effective.
Oh, thank you. And that was the point. That movement was really, the chorus was accompanimental at that point, using it as yet a different kind of instrument.
Thank you.
That was the opening of Movement 3 of The Mystic Trumpeter. And now on to Movement 4.
The fourth movement is where I decided to use a different soloist for the narrator. I went with Jay Carter, who is a world-class countertenor and is on faculty at William Jewell. Knowing that I had the opportunity to write for him, I read this text and it just screamed countertenor, something that harkened back to days of old, as it were, because the text itself is, "Blow again, trumpeter, and for my sensuous eyes, bring the old pageants, show the feudal world," and it goes on and talks about ladies and cavaliers, barons in their castle halls, troubadours singing, armed knights go forth to redress wrongs, the Holy Grail. So I really wanted to capture a vision of a time long ago, so the trumpeter has started us way in the past, and so I chose to use a medieval dance tune, La Regina, which is actually presented in full in the organ underneath this almost improvisatory countertenor solo. But what was really cool about that La Regina tune is that it already had some of the pitch content that I was using for the trumpeter theme, so it was easy to manipulate and easy to get into the fabric of the work and still sound like it was organically meant to be there. So with Movement 5, I had this idea of duetting texture, and I felt that perhaps I should use a voice that was similar in range to that of a trumpet, and so I went with Sarah Tannehill Anderson, who was a magnificent soprano in Kansas City, a member of the Kansas City Chorale, and at the time she was on faculty at William Jewell as well. And so getting to write for her voice was a joy, as well as the other two gentlemen you've heard earlier. In addition to her being easy to work with, Sarah has an incredible high range. And so I found that I could write her clear up to high C's with no issue. And it was a chance for me to be able to do all those things that you're told as a young composer that are inappropriate for sopranos. You don't put a soprano on text all the way up there. Well, guess what? This one can do it. So I had a good time experimenting and breaking out of the safety net of normal composing rules for myself to be able to work with her, because she's just so wonderful. This idea of the trumpeter and the soprano duetting in love, but not necessarily a buoyant, happy, joyous love. It's kind of a melancholy love. It's about all those wonderful times that happen in the text. It says, "Love that is day and night, love that is sun and moon and stars, love that is crimson, sumptuous, sick with perfume, so blissfully happy some, and some so silent, dark, and nigh to death." And if you'll notice, the chimes playing throughout, they're playing the trumpeter's theme throughout underneath with the sustain on, so that you're getting sort of this unsettled, never landing on solid ground.
Thank you.
Movement 6 is about war. The text itself, blow again, trumpeter, conjure war's wild alarums. Swift to thy spell, a shuddering hum like distant thunder rolls, and you get these visions later on in the piece of the deeds of ruthless brigands. I hear their cries for help. I see ships foundering at sea. So what I decided to do was pair up the baritone again with his heroic gusto with a chorus of men. And so I used the men from both of the ensembles with whom I was working at that point. And the idea was both to be stereotypical with the men, but also sort of chiding at the folly of war. So I have the men singing with great gusto, as if they're enjoying the idea. Lo, where the armed men hasten, lo, mid the clouds of dust, the glint of the bayonets. But none of it is triumphant. It's all underpinned by angular, disjunct, unfortunate music, is really the way I was thinking of it.
Well, parenthetically, this was what he experienced when he was a nurse in the Civil War.
Precisely. So with movement 7, this is where the trumpeter has led the listener slash the narrator. As the narration has gone on, more people have become involved in this greater understanding of the folly of humanity. So with movement 7, I stripped away all the brass and percussion and organ and left just the trumpeter and the choir exposed, bare. And for the reason of this wonderful text in movement 7 that says, I see the enslaved, the overthrown, the hurt, the oppressed of the whole earth. I feel the measureless shame and humiliation of my race. It becomes all mine. And I felt that that was the whole point of this poem, to take the listener one step further and say, you, individual person listening, you're not removed from this. You're complicit in it. You're part of this just by virtue of being human. We're not going to preview the last movement. You'll get to hear it in context of the whole piece, basically because it's the culmination of the entire work. And it takes you from that lowest of the low point where you're feeling the shame and humiliation of humanity and offers hope for the future with texts like war, sorrow, suffering gone, the rank earth purged, nothing but joy left, the ocean filled with joy. In that you'll hear the trumpeter's theme will be all over the place. It will have full brass, full percussion, the choirs, and all three soloists. The performance you're going to hear is from the album The Trumpet Sounds on Centaur Records, a recording of the William Jewell College Concert Choir, the Greater Kansas City American Guild of Organists, Schola Cantorum, Ron Witzke, baritone, Sarah Tannehill Anderson, soprano, Jay Carter, countertenor, Randolph Lee, playing trumpet, Anne-Marie Rigler on organ, and some fabulous brass players, trumpets Brian Gornick, Eric Mann, Dustin Williams, trombones Jeremy Dowden, Albert Miller, Sarah Miller, and percussionists Samantha Brandt, Stephen Martin, Mai Tadakoro, and Tony Wang. And this is a recording which I conducted and is now available on Centaur Records.
The Mystic Trumpeter, conducted and composed by Anthony Maglione. Thank you.
Blow again, trumpeter. Blow again.
Distant thunder roll.
You just heard a complete performance of The Mystic Trumpeter by Anthony Maglione. Performing forces were the William Jewell College Concert Choir, the Greater Kansas City American Guild of Organists Schola Cantorum, Randolph Lee, trumpet, Anne Marie Rigler, organ, Ronald Witzke, baritone, Sarah Tannehill Anderson, soprano, and Jay Carter, countertenor, conducted by Anthony Maglione and recorded in Grace Cathedral in Topeka, Kansas.
Before I let you go, I wanted to ask, are any of the movements with choir suitable for a standalone piece?
That's a good question. I don't know that they are. The piece that could have been excerpted ends in a fashion that it needs to be completed by the downbeat of the following movement.
Right, I see. Tony Maglione, it's been such a pleasure to get to spend the hour with you. Thanks so much for making the time. It's a brilliant work. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much, and I appreciate you having me on the air.
Well, I do hope you've enjoyed this radio premiere of The Mystic Trumpeter by Dr. Anthony Maglione, and that you can join me again for another Sounds Choral. The associate producer of Sounds Choral is Rachel Katz. Production consultant is Michael Noland. I'm your host and producer, Marjorie Herman. As always, thanks so much for listening.